As the years passed, these feelings didn't go away, especially when he thought about serfdom, which he openly called slavery. A quote from 1818. "I used to sit on my balcony in the mornings and enjoy a smoke." By the way, he had a lovely house, a large house sitting on the embankment of one of Petersburg's canals. "I used to sit on the balcony in the mornings and enjoy a smoke, but now even this simple pleasure has been spoiled by thoughts of slavery. Working in the highest bodies of government, as I indicated he did, only deepened his despair." He wrote the following in 1820 about his colleagues in the very important and influential State Council. "I foresee nothing good to come from the council. I have hope in Count Miloradovich, half hope in Count Kochubei, one quarter hope in Prince Golitsyn. As for the rest, what can one expect from those automatons composed of mud, hair powder, gold braid, and personified meanness, stupidity, and egoism? They looked European, but in their souls, in their spirits, in their values, they were not." Western Europe, in other words, had opened his eyes to Russia, and the sight of it made him suffer. His eyes were also, of course, like that of his friends, opened by education and books. The first years of the 19th century, even more than the century that had preceded it, was a time of enormous intellectual and cultural ferment, all of which had a great impact on Turgenev and his friends. There was expanding educational opportunities, especially higher education, publishing, imported books, public lectures, and most importantly, there were places for thoughtful, young, educated Russians to meet and talk, this public space. There were cultural circles. They were often called with the Russian word kruzhki or kruzhok, literally means a circle. And this tradition became very important in the later history of the intelligentsia as a place to gather and talk and think. There were Masonic lodges. There were various literary organizations. And where the talk was about literature, it was often really about life. And eventually, underground political organizations, such as the ones Turgenev helped to organize in St. Petersburg. The Union of Salvation, formed in 1816. A union of welfare that emerged out of that in 1817. And finally, the still more secretive, still more political Northern Society, established in 1821. These were places where young Russians like Turgenev looked for a meaningful way to live their lives and to serve their country. In their thinking, men like Turgenev were very much children of the 18th century, of the Enlightenment. They were rationalists. They were humanists. They were humanists in the sense that they despised the conservative view of human beings as essentially evil, fallen creatures. For them, every human being is endowed with reason. And this meant that every human being had the power to create a better world and also deserves a life of dignity and respect. Whatever their origins, whatever their social status, they all were endowed with the same natural, God-given wisdom, reason. Needless to say, they hated Russian serfdom, really slavery, as Turgenev called it, for nothing better exemplified the way in which ordinary Russians in Russia were degraded, were treated as if they had no human dignity. In fact, in their view, the entire Russian system of autocracy and aristocracy and serfdom degraded people beneath the top. They were also, as I said, rationalists. They believed passionately that the world is malleable, that societies and political structures and people could be changed according to the dictates of reason. And this rationalism shaped their political ideals. And none of them wanted the masses to rule. They were too irrational. Instead, they looked to a strong state as the best hope for change. A state, though, that would be led by rational leaders, by wise individuals. It's not surprising that one of Turgenev's greatest political heroes was Peter the Great, a man who used reason to force Russia, not gently, but decisively, into Western civilization. And he deeply hoped that Alexander I would be like the great ancestor, like Peter I, and even better.